Welcome back to Broad Stacks. Remember, our call number is 433-401-790. We'd love to hear from you. But before we go to the next caller, John, I'd like to reflect on something the last caller said when he talked about the whole question of attitude. Attitude is one of the most important things in life, because attitude is something even more important than aptitude. Because if you have the right attitude, a positive attitude, with a strong work ethic, you can get more out of a person that they didn't even think they had in them because of the right attitude. And in addition, that made me remember something I read in a book many years ago, a book called Paradise Lost, with John Milton, in which, this is a book that deals with it's fictional, but it seeks to recreate and give person insight into what happens after Satan was kicked out of heaven by God. And when Satan was supposed to be in hell, it's an occupant teasing him. It's, man, you're a big right hand of man of God, and no, you don't hear like us and that sort of thing. And he said, how can you put up with this? He says, you were overthrown, and no, you're just an ordinary person in a place that he said, This is what John Milton wrote, but it deals with the truth. The mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell or a hell of heaven. It is how your attitude to what has brought you that determines the outcome. And that again brings me to another Barbadian proverb, in which, and I say it in relation to some of the attacks that Marshall's Lane is going. Is being subject to, people are imputing all kind of motives to her, etc. But the point is, what she done useful? Is it true? Is it accurate? Is it meaningful? And it reminds me of the Beijing saying, which says, not that, and remember, I'm not referring to Miss Marshall Eisner as the devil, but the saying goes, if the Lord send it and the devil bring it, you take it. In other words, you don't deal with the bringer or the messenger, deal with the message. The message from Lord, you take it from the messenger. And again, I'm not in any way imputing any improper alliances with Marshall's name, but the point is, she has done a civic duty for which she is to be admired, despite all the detractors of what they have to say. We'll take our next call now. Rastas, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Murray. Kalioka, Dawala here, how are you?
Not too bad, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. I have called to address a number of issues this morning, about three or so, and I will start with that of the CXC issue, as would be expected. Mm-hmm. Not many people might recall, but yesterday marked 6 months exactly that since the release of the results in September last year. And suffice it to say that in these 6 months hence, a significant number of students continue to be materially disaffected by the tragedy that has gone on there, both in terms of them being educationally handicapped, in terms of the loss of opportunity, financially handicapped, in terms of the loss of scholarships to overseas universities, as well, in a very material sense, psychologically, handicapped or affected, rather, I should say, in terms of the adverse mental health impacts that this whole saga has had. And at the same time, and on a parallel track, many of these students now have also to contend with the arrangements to return for the next suite of exams this year, which will take place around June and July, in an environment where, for example, in Jamaica, I read in today's paper that the Prime Minister has ordered the closure of all schools due to their spiking cases in Barbados. We may at some point be returning to the classroom, but we have already lost so much time. And so there are a number of issues in the air right now in respect both of last year's examinations and this year's examinations that I would wish to remind the public of. And that, so for example, you might have heard a relative quiet on the front of in relation to last year's results, and that is because the matter has now progressed to a higher level. And therefore, the discussion.
Sir, what do you mean by higher level? Could you explain higher level to us without betraying any secrets?
Well, the matter is now with legal counsel, And so that discussion, you know, in a public forum, I would not wish to prejudice any such the matter.
Appreciate it.
Yes. And at the same time, we have the situation with this year's results. This year's examinations. And these are all issues that we have to look at seriously, recognizing that the dynamics remain fluid to the extent that there could very well be a change in circumstance in the next few weeks or months that might necessitate a change in how we look to do these examinations. So I would counsel all the relevant policy makers to be flexible, not only to be flexible, but also to be consultative. I think that has really been where the council has fallen down and has run itself into a significant degree of problems because it has
Can I interject here, sir?
Sure.
In my preamble this morning, I also mentioned that we need one of the issues on the table as far as it was concerned was the question of exams, CXC exams and 11-plex exam. Because what has happened, particularly in the case of CXC, is to me worse than what we are now finding in the case of the GIS. Because I say that because we knew what went on there. And I am amazed, absolutely amazed, at the lack of outrage and consistent outrage as to how this thing has unfurled. We have the Barbados have never been given a proper account as to what transpired, what the government's position is, what we have just been given the mirrors of information. And I'm given the role of education in any society, in this society, Barbados used to have a love affair with education. I'm not sure it's still obtained. But I'm saying that to be a child going through this, whether it's at CXC or preparing 11 plus, in this environment, and the lack of information, the lack of a definitive or some kind of outline of a policy and a program and idea, to me, it must be most troubling and disconcerting and emotionally destabilizing. And the society will probably pay the price for this down the years. When you combine this with COVID and all, and the turmoil that's gone to people's eyes, it lies their expectations, their outlook on life, it must be seriously, seriously troubling. And I wouldn't like to be in your boots at all. Even though we grew up in a different era.
No doubt about it. Many, many students in this country are debilitated by the paralysis that is brought about by the uncertainty in which we live. And it is compounded, indeed, when you have the feeling that an institution like the CXC is not consulting fulsomely with the student population and with teachers to a lesser extent, and that is contributing to a lot of the problems. And so I on every occasion on which I speak to the matter, I always call for a greater degree of consultation from the council, and I will do so again. I will certainly hope that perhaps at some point in time I might have said it enough for them to take it to heart. But moving on to the next issue.
Before you go, to me, the role of governments, the ministries of education across the Caribbean, right, and as against CXC as an institution, reminds me of what the parallel with the advisory board at GIS as against the staff. No teeth. I get to believe that CXC is, like has been said, is an institutional law itself. And that people kowtow. It has its own rules, its own perspective, and it's going ahead, and no matter what, it is not accountable. I'm amazed at the intransigence that politicians who must know that what is happening must impact on their societies, and probably could impact on their electoral chances down the road, and the state of the society. I feel that there should have been more public explanation, and more public indication as they're unhappy, and that they have been working strenuously to bring about the changes, saying that CXC is supposed to be an arm, an organ, a function of the region, and not a function of itself.
Indeed. No doubt that the regional ministries have to do more, including their technical officers, have to do more to attempt to rein in the council, which has, certainly to a lot of persons' minds, has become, as you would have rightly pointed out, an institution, a law unto itself, really. And so more certainly needs to be done in that regard. But the second issue that I would wish to touch on was in relation to the same government industrial school matter. And truly, I think that the whole country was outraged by it, by the revelations the last few days or week and a half or so. And to the extent that it is a most regrettable situation, and I think that it requires a moment of pause. And indeed, a lot of persons might be calling for the removal of the Dehadeo individuals at the school. And while that is certainly a case with a great degree of merit, I think that we have to be sober in our assessment of the situation. In addition to the fact that I would have heard the minister say in the press conference on Saturday that really and truly, while it is regrettable, the procedures undertaken in relation to the present case were really constituted standard operating procedure. And the idea that could be standard operating procedure is reprehensible. And it suggests, therefore, to me, a need for the retraining of staff, or perhaps new staff entirely. But any decision which is made in that regard must be done with a cool head and in a sober manner. And that is why I think that the minister coming out at the time at which he did, after he had investigated the issue, to summarily, not fully or whatever, but certainly a summary investigation of the matter, was appropriate. And I would expect that Minister Abrams will once again come to the public at a later time to really address even more fulsomely how now we are going to address the issues which have come up. I really would like to underscore another point, and that is the fact that I think the government has understood the need for the reform of the juvenile justice system, as well as child protection. And I heard the minister say it, so it would not be out of turn for me to say it, but I know for a fact that within recent times, well before this incident, the government was indeed moving in that direction. I sat in on consultations on the same child protection legislation, and that to the extent that it is now at an advanced stage, as the minister would have indicated, the country would be pleased at some point in time in the near future to see tangible reform in that sector. And I think that it is a moment not only for us to reflect on juvenile justice, but the justice system in general. And I know that that is something that also generates a lot of interest due to the perceived antiquated nature of it. And that is something that I think is also both in need of being addressed, and I am aware is being tangibly addressed in a meaningful ways, which can be presented to the public at some point in time in the near future. And so it has given us the opportunity really to address these dastardly parts of ourselves that confront us. And I, for that reason, I think it is useful. It is regrettable that individuals have had to suffer. That is never something that is acceptable. And we must now do the hard work of atoning for that as a society, certainly, as well as the school.
Okay. I just like to add to that. Well said and well reasoned, and I support it all the way. But I would like to think that in the meantime, while we are seeking to codify and put into writing and develop and implement and pass and proclaim this new legislation, create these new institutions, etc., that there are certain functional things, everyday things that can be done at the institution, and wherever possible that can be done to remediate the situation, make life better for this institution, for those affected, should be done in the interim. So we do not wait for there to be a perfect situation, but the functionality, the things that I'm a functionist by nature. I won't say I'm going to provide a useful outcome that's not harmful to anybody. I think you should go ahead and put those things which can be changed, even if it costs money. It probably might not even cost a great deal of money, but begin to wait to improve the lives and situation and prospect of those persons, both staff and residents, wherever possible.
I agree with you entirely. There is a difference between policy and law, and that where it is possible to undertake certain policy, effect certain policy changes within the current framework, I think that would reap a different outcome or situation would definitely be something that government and the minister specifically would need to look at. So I look forward really to the board, the newly appointed board, coming to grips with this matter and reporting to the minister, and the minister reporting again to the public in the near future.
Are you happy with the composition of the new board?
That reminds me what I will say about the board in terms of it being an advisory position, in that it being an advisory board, rather, that it is not unusual in the sense that these types of facilities, so for example, at the prison, you have the board that superintends the prison is an advisory board also, and it is a similar type of institution. So that is not necessarily unusual in our particular framework. But what I will say about the board is that I haven't gotten the opportunity, or I'm not privy to the extent of the qualifications of the members of the board. What I would say is that I would have liked to have seen some sort of youth representative on that board. I've seen a recommendation from the youth advocates who are addressing this issue so well for a specific recommendation in terms of a name of an individual to sit on that board, and I would tend to support that. I think it's regrettable that we didn't have a person, a young representative on the advisory board, but generally the minister would be aware of the qualifications. I'm not, and so I really don't like to speak without reference to the facts.
But my last comment is before we, because you have to wrap up, is that I noticed there are at least two stated and identified religious personages on the board. I hope that this is not that does not result in a feeling that religion can do it all, and that these children might be young sinners, and therefore once their souls are saved, everything will be all. I hope that is only a part of the qualification of the person, and that the running of the school, the institution should are based on sound, scientific, well-reasoned, professional policies for the benefit of the children. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Right, thank you, sir. Brass Stacks, good day. Hello, Brass Stacks.
Hello.
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 Hello. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. No afternoon yet, man. 11:30, like you're hungry, like you're looking for lunch, man.
I call you right now, too. I have a problem, and I feel because of your involvement over a period of time with the copyright and the entertainment industry, that you have put my belief wrong. We just saw a competition at Kensington Oval the night before. One of the contestants sang a tune that was judged already in the Migob Song Festival and came back in this contest and sang the same song, same chorus, everything. Now, tell me something. Is that right?
It all depends on, that would depend on the rules and the condition of entry into and performing the competition. Right. Some people sang songs which I'm sure were classic songs, etc., which were sung elsewhere in other competitions or whatever, but it was not also is a performing thing more than to me. Originality was not one of the prerequisites.
Well, I know for a fact that the writer of the song would have his rights to the lyrics, whatever it may be. But then with that had to be recorded already as a song that was judged, and that the writer should have win a prize, then that the writer would be entitled to part of that prize thereof again?
No, I mean, people design the competition the way they want it to be, to achieve the objective that they want, not to satisfy all and sundry. I'm sure that use of the song would have been scrutinized within cost cap, etc., so that you respect intellectual property rights are all concerned, and therefore, to me, that was a given. But the people designed the competition the way they wanted it.
So it's a matter of criteria, what they wanted.
Right, and people should know what they're getting into by entering and participating.
Yeah. All right, I'm subject to be corrected, right? Now, the other point, Dwayne, JS, Government Industrial School. What role does the Ministry of Education play in the establishment and the continuation of the school? I know for a fact that some of the students at the secondary school, Dell Secondary School, are now also preparing for the CXC examination. But somewhere along the line, I am not hearing the Ministry of Education called in on anything with this issue that has happened at the school. I know that they've got their own boards. The other schools have got their own boards. The adults have got their own schools, their own board. But my particular position here is, what role does the Ministry of Education play a role? There is the certain curriculum subjects that are taught at DOTS that falls under the Ministry of Education. Then what is the true position in terms of discipline, in terms of punishment? What is the position on that?
To my mind, the government industrial school falls under the parent ministry of government industrial school with the Ministry of Home Affairs. Right? Not the Ministry of Education. The Ministry of Education is like the Ministry of Labor or Technology, might have an associated relationship with it. And the parent ministry will be able to call on different government agencies or government ministries where they need their assistance, their support, their involvement to provide them with expertise, et cetera, to satisfy certain objectives. But it doesn't mean that associated agency or ministry has to come out and speak when the parent ministry is speaking. Parent ministry is the policy administrator and conceptualizer, et cetera. They run the institution there, so they have lead role in it. And to me, quite rightfully, the Ministry of Home Affairs is taking a lead role and leaving the support to come behind the scenes, because everything doesn't have to be brought in public for everything they do. But to me, that is something that is automatic. Just otherwise, I'm sure people could not have had been taking CXC subjects at the government industrial school over a period of time. This is not the first time that's happened in the past. So I'm saying there should be a collaboration among all the agencies. What as long as that collaboration is of a professional and fruitful nature, it should benefit those concerned.
So then the teachers at the government industrial school are assigned there not to the Ministry of Education, but assigned to the board of the government industrial school.
I don't know the details of it. It might be that they might have a visiting relationship, a part-time relationship with the school, assigned to a school or the ministry. I don't want to guess and speculate. I would prefer if somebody who with a better information were to come to the public, explain those kind of details to how does it operate in reality.
It's curious though. For example, JS, Government Industrial School, and you and I know that back in 1952, one of the very strong components of the curriculum was the industrial level of the school. In terms of work, in terms of carpentry, in terms of various subject matters that fall under the industrial arm. But here it says the school has been given a branch government industrial school, but no subjects of industrial, speaking for subject correction, have been taken into court.